So look at this, right? This picture. Who knows what that is? Hopefully, I took it from the right source on Google Images. Basically, it's invasive spinal surgery. Correct, doctors? It looks like it, right? Good. So it's invasive spinal surgery. Now, I want you to just imagine that you're observing one of the senior surgeons in this hospital. So you're observing, as a student, one of the most senior surgeons of this hospital, and you see him consciously, with intent, snipping the spinal cord for no reason. He just snips it. Doesn't like the guy. Doesn't like, he smells or something. Just snips it. I don't like you, patient. Let me just snip your spinal cord, yeah? Is that morally wrong? Put your hand up if you think it's morally wrong. So you all think it's morally wrong. Good. Put your hands down. Now, another question. Is it objectively morally wrong? Put your hand up if you think it's objectively morally wrong, with intent to snip the spinal cord of a patient that doesn't require it to be snipped. Now, put your hand up if you think it's objectively morally wrong. It's not a trick question. Is it objectively morally wrong? Okay, all of you, good. So, I've just tested your moral intuitions here, yeah? Because when it comes to philosophy, generally speaking, you can reduce everything just to an intuition, and the whole of philosophy is justifying your intuitions, essentially, right? Generally speaking. So, not only do we think that snipping the spinal cord or cutting the spinal cord of a patient with intent is morally wrong, we've all agreed it's objectively morally wrong. Now, let me help you in the definition of objective here, because we may have different definitions, okay? When we're talking about something being objective, it's considering or presenting the facts without being influenced by personal feelings or opinions. So, in the context of morality, objective morals, something being objectively wrong or objectively good, means it's not dependent on someone's limited mind, or limited emotions and feelings. For example, 1 + 1 = 2. Two. That is an objective fact, regardless if you don't like maths. I hate maths, right? Generally speaking. I'm like, you know, just because I hate maths, it doesn't now follow that 1 + 1 is not 2, right? And if I somehow try to convince you that 1 + 1 = 7, you'd be like, no, you're wrong. So this is what we're talking about when we're talking about objective morals. We're saying it's not influenced or dependent on someone's personal feelings or emotions or even limited mind. Just like mathematical truths, 1 + 1 = 2, regardless of what you say. If you try to convince me, just because you're medical students, that, hey, Hamza, you're wrong, 1 + 1 is actually 5, I'd be like, no, you just, what drugs are you taking? Yeah? Do you see my point? So this is what we mean by something being objective. So if these moral values and facts are objective in this way, they sit outside of the human self in some way. Because it's not dependent on my limited mind or limited emotions. They're outside of me. In a way, they're like, you know, you just imagine I'm holding a moral fact. Not that you can, because it's not really tangible. This is meta-ethics. This is metaphysical stuff. But generally speaking, if this moral value, this moral truth is objective and it's not dependent on a limited mind or limited emotions, therefore it's outside, so to speak. If it's outside, so to speak, it requires some grounding. It requires a foundation. Remember meta-ethics? What is its foundation? Why is it objective? How do we explain its objectivity? Where did it come from? What is the source of this moral value? Do you see the point? So it requires some kind of foundations. So far, so good? You with me? Good. So one would argue, hold on a second, Hamza. Don't you need some evidence to prove that morals are objective? Yes, we all believe it's objectively morally wrong with intent and consciously to snip someone's spinal cord. We know it's morally wrong, objectively. But where's the proof? Well, this is about meta-ethics. You don't need proof. You don't need some kind of empirical justification to prove that a moral value is objective. Because it's about meta-ethics. You need first principles or the lenses that you put on your eyes to understand your moral intuitions. So when it comes to things like this, you don't need proof that it's objective, just like you don't need proof that causality exists. Causality exists. We observe causes and we observe effects. Fine. We might not know the nature between the causal link. What is the causal link? What is causality itself? But we don't need empirical proof to prove that this internal notion in our minds of causality actually exists. It's a metaphysical discussion. Okay? So you don't really need proof for things to be objective. You could start with the first principle. That's why it's called an axiomatic argument. You start with the first principle, it's objective. It's based on my intuitions. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. And if you study Western philosophy, even Eastern philosophy, there's a hell of a lot of assumptions going on anyway. Yeah, there's first principle. There's no first principles free philosophy. Even science. If you study the philosophy of science, you'd understand that there are some assumptions, some first principles. Namely, that the external world exists, that there are external causal relations. That's a first principle. Another first principle or assumption that science has is that nature is uniform. If we observe 50% of the universe and there's gravity, then it would follow that gravity permeates the whole universe based upon the assumption that nature is uniform. Anyway, that's a lengthy discussion, but neither here or there, but you get my point, right? So we don't really need proof for the fact that, you know, we believe that morals are objective. However, if you're talking about proof in a non-empirical way, you're talking about, is it coherent? Then yes, we could start discussing if belief in some morals being objective, is that a coherent first principle or a coherent assumption or a coherent axiom in order to really understand our moral intuitions? We could discuss that, but that's a separate topic. So from an Islamic point of view, although I have to be intellectually fair, that not all the theological schools actually agree with objective morals. For example, the school of creed known as the Ash'ari, the group of Muslims that adopted the Ash'ari creed, they generally speaking, and I know there is a spectrum, they didn't basically agree that there's anything moral about the universe, generally speaking. It's just arbitrary divine commands from that point of view. Okay, but you have other schools of creed, like the Maturidis, for example. They said that no, the human mind can rationalize and can actually understand using the sound reason that you have moral truths in the world. Then you had the Atharis, who basically said no, well, generally speaking, there are moral values that are objective and they are grounded in God, but they're grounded in his commands, and those commands are not arbitrary because they're linked to his nature, because he is good, he is al-bar, the source of all goodness. And I'm going to discuss that a bit later. Now, I'm going to basically talk about, I can't talk about all the schools, I'm going to talk about the school of creed that I adopt, especially for the moral argument, because I think it's more coherent. But just to be intellectually fair, I wanted to give you a taste of all the schools of creeds from that point of view, okay? So you're intelligent enough to basically navigate this effectively. So why do I think from an Islamic perspective there are morals that are objective? Well, it's very simple, because the worst sin or the worst evil, if you like, the most evil thing from an Islamic intellectual spiritual perspective, according to the Quranic discourse and the prophetic traditions, is actually polytheism. It is actually worshipping other than Allah. It is not worshipping God. That is considered the highest evil, if you like. Well, the worst evil. Now, what's interesting, can we actually say that's subjectively morally wrong? No, because the Quran makes it in such an objective way that it is wrong. It is one of the greatest injustices from a spiritual perspective and one of the greatest evils to worship other than God, right? To associate partners with Him. So can we really say, oh yeah, God says that by in a kind of subjective kind of sense? I don't think that's appropriate. Or he says it because it's just based on his command, and his command, that command is just based on some kind of raw power. I don't see how you can navigate that if you look at the texts. What I would say is, look, part of God's nature is the fact that he deserves to be worshipped. Allah, Al-Ilah, the one who is worthy of all worship. Worshipping God is a necessity by virtue of who he is. Worshipping God is a necessity by virtue of who he is. So therefore, you can't really say this moral command to worship God is actually subjective. I said, no, it's objective because it's done in such an objective way. So that's why I would argue that there are objective moral values, especially in the Islamic tradition. Not only that, when you look at the Meccan surahs, the chapters of the Quran that were revealed in the Meccan period, you would see that God mentions things like justice and compassion. Does God define them for us? No. I don't see a lengthy definition in the Quranic discourse on what rahmah is, on what compassion is. Fine, we have a linguistic definition, and we may have some prophetic traditions that show the behavior expression of rahmah and mercy, but does the Quran really elaborate on what is mercy and what is justice? Especially in the Meccan period when it was addressing the polytheist Arabs. So if God in the Quran is saying to the polytheist Arabs, this is justice, this is mercy, then there is an assumption that they know there is a common moral denominator. They understood what justice and mercy was. So it's as if it was referring to some kind of objective sense that we can see or perceive in the universe. It was targeting their moral intuitions, their objective moral intuitions in some way. You can't just claim, oh, that justice is God's justice, what He defines, and God's mercy, what He defines. Really? But the whole Quran is like a conversation with people and telling them to be just, to be merciful. And Allah wasn't talking just to Muslims, He was talking to the polytheist Arabs. So they must have understood what justice and mercy meant in some way. Otherwise, most of the Quranic discourse would be absolutely meaningless. And I find that very problematic if you say there are no objective moral values from that point of view. It makes sense of Islamic theology. So, objective moral values exist. It makes sense of our moral intuitions. Now, I want to now start to talk about, if that's the case, then God exists. Think about this, right? If snipping the spinal cord of a patient that doesn't require his spinal cord or her spinal cord to be snipped with intent and consciously, if that is objectively morally wrong, as we all have agreed, then it follows God exists. Sounds like a crazy claim, right? It does, doesn't it? Okay, let me explain to you. All right, don't worry. I'm not that crazy. So listen. Here is the basic logic of the argument. It's an axiomatic argument. So we start with the axiom, the first principle, that there are objective morals. If you start with that, it necessitates God's existence. Okay, are you ready for this? It's not a leap of faith. It's not kind of, you know, some kind of false logical inference. No, it follows logically. Let me explain. Number one, if objective morals exist, God exists. Number two, objective morals exists. Three, therefore, God exists. And let me just elaborate why. So, why is it the case that if we believe axiomatically, first principle, that objective morals exist, that God must exist? Because God is the only foundation to rationally explain objective morals. Why? Because God, number one, is not subjective. He transcends human subjectivity. He's outside of the universe. He can make the universal moral claim. God is Al-Alim, Al-Hakim, Al-Bar. He is the knowing, the wise, and He is the good, the source of all goodness. And God's names and attributes are what you call maximally perfect. They are to the highest degree possible. All right? They are to the highest degree possible. They have no deficiency and no flaw. And they are perfect. So it follows when He commands, then His commands are good, and goodness is actually an essential part of His nature. As Professor Ian Markham, he explains, God explains the mysterious ought pressing down our lives, and God explains the universal nature of the moral claim. As God is outside the world, God the Creator can both be external and make universal commands. Also, He's an objective source for morality because He has the totality of moral knowledge from that point of view. Not only this, His commands are not subject to anything. He's not limited by anything external to Him. So by definition, He is an objective source. So from this point of view, it's starting to make sense that if there are objective moral truths, and objective moral truths are outside of limited self, limited mind, outside of social consensus and peer pressure, and they're outside, so to speak, they require some explanation and grounding. Remember meta-ethics, to explain the nature of this moral value and where it came from, its foundation. Well, the only way to explain it rationally is actually God's existence from the perspective that what explains the moral value, the objective moral value, are God's commands. Because God is outside of the universe, He is objective, He's not subjective, He has total moral knowledge, and all of the things that we just mentioned. What else can ground objective morals? How else can you explain objective morals? And what's interesting, Allah says in the Quran, God says in the Quran, say indeed, God does not order immorality. So one would argue, well, surely there's alternatives. It can't just be God to rationally explain objective moral truths and values. There must be something else. Well, there is. There are alternatives, but I'm going to address why those alternatives are false. And those alternatives include biology, the Darwinian mechanism, for example, social pressure, moral realism, and constructivism. Now, these are meta-ethical approaches, or some people claim they can be meta-ethical approaches to explain objective morals. Now, before I go and deconstruct them, if you're philosophically minded, you know that there is a key response to what I've said so far. Anyone know what the key response is? It's a dilemma. What is it called? Euthyphro's dilemma. Yes, excellent. So one would argue, hold on, Hamza. This is fuzzy logic. Let me try and break down what you're saying here. God can't be the kind of rational foundation for objective moral truths and values because here's a dilemma. And this is Euthyphro's dilemma, or sometimes known as Plato's dilemma. It basically goes like this. All right, so you're saying God exists because objective moral values exist. If objective moral values exist, God must exist. Objective moral values exist, therefore God exists. Why? Because God's commands are the only foundation for objective moral truths. And therefore, if God's commands are the only foundation, therefore He must exist too. Okay, fair enough. But let's break it down. And this is what the dilemma is saying. Is something morally good because God commands it? Or does God command it because it's morally good? Here's the dilemma. Let me repeat it to you. Is something morally good because God commands it? Or does God command it because it's morally good? Now, one would argue this is a dilemma. And there are two horns to the dilemma. You have the arbitrariness horn and you have the independent standard horn. Let me explain what this means. So, if you adopt the first part, which is morality is defined by God's commands alone, then there's a little bit of a problem. You may be thinking as Muslims or as religious people, how's that a problem? Because you just explained that objective moral truths are based on God's commands. I have, absolutely. But there is an assumption here. When this part of the dilemma is basically saying that morality is defined by God's commands, it's just the command in an abstract sense, divorced away from God's nature. It's dislocated away from God's nature. So what they're saying is, well, God could say that you should kill all 55-year-olds, and it would be morally good because God just said it. We don't really appreciate that. It doesn't make sense of our moral intuitions. Also, if we take this side of the dilemma in this way, we would have to believe that there is nothing in the universe that is objectively morally wrong or objectively morally good. So we can't accept that part of the dilemma. Because they're assuming that it's just God's commands, and those commands are not linked to His nature in any way. They've dislocated God's commands away from His nature. So we can't say morality is defined just by God's commands in that way, because it makes it arbitrary, and it also makes us understand that there should be nothing in the universe that we should even consider as objectively morally wrong. Well, let's look at the other side of the dilemma. Well, morality is now external to God's commands, because it says, or does God command it because it's morally good? Well, if it's morally good, then you already know what good is to judge God's commands by. So therefore, good is outside of God's commands. Game over. Argument done. So what they're saying here is that moral standards are now completely outside of God. So we're not going to accept that part of the dilemma either. So what's the solution? We can't take the arbitrariness horn, and we can't take the independent standard horn of the dilemma. What do we do? We can't say that in an abstract way morality is just based on God's commands, because we don't believe God's commands are dislocated from His nature. And we can't accept the fact that morality is external to God, that good is external to God. So what do we do? Who's got the answer? Who has the answer? Sorry? Put the two together. Hmm, interesting. How?
You would say that objective good is based on God's nature.
Good. So objective good is based on God's nature. Good. It's something what I said in the beginning. Yeah. So here's the response. There is a third option. It's a false dilemma. Why? Because God is good. Al-Bar. He is the source of all goodness. As Professor Akhtar in his really good book called The Quran and the Secular Mind, he says, there is a third alternative. A morally stable God of the kind found in scripture, a supreme being who would not arbitrarily change his mind about the goodness of compassion and the evil of sexual misconduct. Such a God always commands good because his character and nature are good. Now let me explain this response a little bit further. So, what we're saying is, there is indeed a moral standard, but it's not external to God. So, there is indeed a moral standard, but it's not external to God. It necessarily follows from God's nature. Goodness is part of God, it's not external to God. So we do have a standard, but that standard is not external to God. It's actually part of who God is. It's part of His reality because He is Al-Bar. He is the source of all goodness. So His nature contains within it the perfect, the maximally perfect, non-arbitrary moral standard. So when He makes a command, the command is a manifestation of His will, and His will doesn't contradict His nature, which is good, wise, loving, merciful. So we have a standard, but it's not external to God. And it is based on God's commands, but it's not arbitrary. It's actually part of God's nature. Shaboom, mic drop, as we say. Yeah, there you go. We've solved the dilemma. Now, a natural response from someone who doesn't agree with this, like an atheist or an agnostic or whoever, they may argue, well, you must know what good is to define God as good, therefore you haven't solved the problem. Well, this is a big philosophical discussion about the kind of necessity of God's goodness. I don't want to get into that, but a good response to this would be, well, God defines what good is because He's the only being worthy of worship, and the only being worthy of worship is the highest moral being. So, we've solved the kind of response here, the kind of Yusufo's dilemma. It doesn't break down our argument. So God's commands and God Himself being the kind of rational foundation to explain objective moral truths, it's still a strong argument. It still follows, if objective morals exist, God must exist. But as I said, there are alternatives. Let's address the alternatives. Are we ready for the alternatives? Good. So the first one was biology. I'm sorry. It just doesn't work. I do apologize, Darwin and everybody else. It just doesn't work. And this doesn't dismantle the Darwinian mechanism. No, don't make that false inference. But you can't now use it as a basis for your meta-ethics, okay? You can't use it for moral ontology. You can't use it to explain the source of objective morals and to explain why morals are objective. Why? Well, let me quote you Charles Darwin. Charles Darwin gave an extreme example as well. He basically said, if men were reared under precisely the same conditions as hive bees, there can hardly be a doubt that our unmarried females would, like the worker bees, think it a sacred duty to kill their brothers, and mothers would strive to kill their fertile daughters, and no one would think of interfering. It's true. Because if we as human beings were reared under precisely the same conditions as the hive bees, if that's the case, then we wouldn't think it's morally wrong to kill our fertile daughters. Now, if you extend the example and you start talking about the nurse shark, if you watch National Geographic, it talks about the nurse shark, and they did some studies or some observations, and they found that the nurse shark male, I believe, bites the fin of its mate and wrestles with it before it mates. That's tantamount to rape. So if we were reared precisely under the same conditions as the nurse shark, we would think rape, no problem, right? God forbid, right? But you get my argument here. So if morals are just about this rearing, you're reared based upon certain biological conditions, then what happens? Number one, morals are not objective anymore because they're subject to inevitable biological changes. Also, morals are not objective anymore because they lose their meaning. There's actually no meaning behind any morality if it just happens to be a kind of biological reaction to certain biological conditions. Where's the moral value and meaning behind morals? They're gone. It's finished. Khalas, as we say. Right? So, from that point of view, I don't think biology or the Darwinian mechanism is very strong to explain the objectivity of morals. By the way, it can explain how we have the capacity to formulate ethical rules, of course, like natural selection, according to the moral philosopher Philip Kitcher. You could basically use natural selection to come to the conclusion that, yes, you know, this is a basis for why we formulate ethical rules. Fine, but that's not our discussion today. So biology is out the window. What's next? Who remembers what next? What's next? Social pressure. What if all human beings, and this is the kind of humanist approach to moral values, because a lot of humans believe that moral values are actually objective. And they say, yeah, when, you know, rational human beings come together, we'll decide, and it'll be objective in that sense. Well, I don't think so. I don't think so, because think about a lot of moral pressures in our society. For example, Nazi Germany in the 1940s, there was some moral pressure, sorry, social pressure in some way, some kind of consensus. Fine, it wasn't 100%, but there was something going on that really, you know, groups of people came together to think it was okay to kill Jewish people and to murder them and to think that they're evil, which we know is objectively morally wrong. So if we use social pressure as the basis for objective moral truths, then we have a problem here. Because moral truths are subject to inevitable social changes. And if you study social psychology, society changes. Just ask your grandma. Just look at TV. Like 20 years ago, MTV was like, you know, it was like, it's like reading the Bible. Honestly, look at MTV today. You know, that's like, you know, almost porn 20 years ago. Not that I know, but you know what I mean, yeah? So it's mubalagha, I'm being, you know, it's hyperbole. So you get my point, right? So it's a crude example, but there are inevitable social changes. Now, even if you study social psychology, you see that social norms are developed, and they're developed because of two main things: informational social influence and normative social influence, which basically is based on the fact that we have a need to belong and we have a need to feel certain. So if I have a need to belong and I have an idea that's alien to your ideas, I may suspend my ideas and throw them away for a while and accept your views and ideas just to belong. Conversely, the other one is that basically we have a need to feel certain. So if I'm uncertain about something, I go to the consensus. And that's how social norms are developed, and social norms change over time. So if our moral values as a result of society and social norms, then we have a big problem, because they're going to be subject to inevitable social changes. And for me, morality loses its meaning, objective morality loses its meaning, and it's subject to inevitable social changes. So from that point of view, it doesn't explain objective morals at all. Social pressure doesn't explain objective morals in any shape or form. We have another alternative, which is called moral realism. Now, moral realism agrees and it says, yes, there are objective moral truths. There are objective moral values. Moral realism says, yes, but they do not require foundation. They just are. I find this a little bit difficult, because we require an answer to the question, why is it objective? Where did it come from? Remember, meta-ethics is about answering the question, why is this moral value objective? And what's its foundation? Where did it come from? It's almost ignoring meta-ethics in a way, saying we can't answer the question, or the only way to answer it is, they just are, get over it, move forward. This is also known as moral objectivism as well. But for me, it gets a little bit more tricky when we understand morals as moral duties. Because when we're thinking justice exists and compassion exists, we don't think of that in some kind of abstract way. Because when we say, yes, this is the compassionate thing to do, this is the just thing to do, we are obligated, we have a duty, right? I'm duty bound to be compassionate in certain contexts, especially, you know, as medical practitioners, you have to show that compassion, you have to show that fairness, etc. You have a moral duty. It's not only recognizing that justice exists somewhere in the world and compassion exists, but what explains that drive to fulfill those moral duties? Moral realism doesn't explain that. Because moral duties are owed. Owed to whom? Do you see the point? And that's why it makes sense of God's commands, because it's owed to God. The sense of moral duties makes sense of God's commands from that point of view. So moral realism is not an alternative either. There's another alternative. One would argue it's a rational alternative, and this is called constructivism. Now, I've taken this from an academic encyclopedia. You can find it online. I forgot the reference. I'll give it to you later. But basically, constructivism is the view that insofar as there are normative truths, for example, truths about what we ought to do, so moral truths, they are in some sense determined by an idealized process of rational deliberation, choice, or agreement. Now, you have to understand something. Constructivism doesn't say that as a result of using your rational faculties and irrational process, you're going to understand what is moral. No, that's epistemology, to know, to find out what is moral. But what it basically says is that morality is construed through rationally, meaning the very fact that man is rational, that becomes a foundation for morality, and it explains the objective nature of morality. It's like the two sides of the same coin. So it's not just like, oh, I'm rational, therefore I'm going to find out in my own way what good is. No, that's epistemology. But rather, constructivism says that the very fact that the human being is rational, that is the foundation for morality. And it explains the nature of objective moral truths, why they're objective in the first place. Now, there's a big discussion, there are volumes of discussion, I don't want to get into it, but basically, one would argue, well, what kind of rationality are you going to use? You know, are you duty-bound to even be rational, right? Because if rationality and objective morals are two sides of the same coin, then in order for objective morals to make sense, you should also be duty-bound to be rational. But are you? You don't have to be. Many of us are really irrational anyway. And there are many studies, if you study the philosophy of the mind, and you study, for example, cognitive science, there are even theorists that claim that human beings are not rational, right? Even if you study David Hume, he said our morality has nothing to do with rationality. We just try to intellectually justify our, you know, emotions, right? But that's a bigger discussion, and it's more nuanced than I've just expressed it. So I do apologize. Go Google it. No, don't Google it. Go buy it. Get a book on it. But anyway, the point is, constructivism doesn't really provide a meta-ethical foundation for objective moral truths. So, I think God's commands and God's existence is the most rational foundation for morals, for objective moral truths. They explain where they came from, God's commands, and they explain, and God's existence explains why moral truths are objective, because of who God is. Game over. So if you believe in objective moral truths, like we discussed what objectivity is from a moral point of view, it philosophically necessitates God's commands and God's existence. If you disagree with me, give me an alternative. Now, before we get into the moral epistemology, I just want to address certain things. One would argue, hold on a second, Hamza, but you know, in religious discussions and discourse, even in our own intuitions, you know, things are not objective because morals change over time. Now, there is a conflation between two understandings of morality here. Absolute morality and objective morality. Absolute morality basically says killing is wrong, right? Or the cessation of human life is wrong. If there is a conscious with intent to cease someone's life, that is morally wrong regardless. That's absolute morality. Objective morality is slightly different. It says ceasing or stopping someone's life, right, for no justification is morally wrong. So objective morals is based upon the moral variables. It's context sensitive. For example, absolute morality would say it is morally wrong to kill a crazy guy with a machine gun if that was the only option to stop him killing 300 children in a school. Absolute morality would say, we don't care if he's going to kill 300 kids, killing him is still morally wrong. Objective morality says, hold on a second, if that's our only option, then it's morally good to stop this person's life if that was the only way to stop him killing 300 children. You may disagree with the example, but don't. It's a logical fallacy to damn the example. You get the point, yeah? Just get the essence of the point. So there's a difference between absolute morality and objective morality. Objective morals are objective from the point of view that they transcend human subjectivity and limited minds and emotions based upon the moral variables. It's context sensitive. So there's a conflation with different types of morality here. The other thing would be, Hamza, in order for this to work, you have to believe That one was our objective. Remember the first principles I spoke about in the beginning? The fact that it's axiomatic, it's first principle. You just have to adopt the fact that some, not all, but some morals are objective. What if someone says, I disagree with you? Fine. You don't have to agree with me. But it becomes very interesting, doesn't it? It's like a double-edged sword. Because if you accept the objectivity of some morals, like snipping the spinal cord of a patient, right? For no reason, deliberately, right? If you accept that some morals are objective, it necessitates God's existence. But if you don't like that conclusion, you'd be like, oh, morals are not objective anymore. There are no objective morals. Well, what happens now is someone can snip, therefore, the spine of a patient and say, you could have your view, I have my view. I think it was ethically, morally good to do it. And you can't point the finger at the KKK or ISIS in an objective, moral way from a philosophical point of view. Because where's your foundation? If it's a subjective now, then khalas. Ahlan wa sahlan. Welcome. All different moral views. You can have a bit of the pie, I'll have a bit of my moral pie as well. They may contradict each other, but so what? That's life. Get over it. Right? It becomes like a double-edged sword, right?